such a dwarf might pull that lever to free the beast, Gwenthel reasoned.
Such was nearly the destruction of Gontalgrim, Gromph explained. The volcano that alerted us to this place many years ago.
But if a dwarf king found the hallowed forge under the control of the drow, Gwenthel remarked. Gromph led her down the way to stand opposite the chamber, then enacted a magical doorway, a dimensional warp that the two of them and Methil could step across.
A simple lever, Gwenthel said when they moved under a low archway into the antechamber.
Let me complicate it, then, the archmage offered.
He moved back under the archway and began casting a powerful spell, calling to the water. When he came back into the antechamber, he led a large, flowing, humanoid construct created entirely of water.
A proper guard against any and all who would come in here, Gromph explained. Except, of course, those who wear the insignia of House Beenri.
The matron mother nodded her appreciation. Gromph signed his fingers at his illithid companion, and the mind flayer's tentacles began to wave and waggle around.
Mark it?
Gwenthel asked, having read his hand signal to Methil.
When we decide to return here, would there be a better place to arrive? Gromph replied.
And Gwenthel understood then that the archmage and his mind flayer had just magically attuned to this particular room for purposes of teleportation, both magical and psionic.
When that was finished,
Gromph moved back under the archway and reconstructed his dimension door and followed Gwenthel back to the ledge across the way.
The Chapel of Cusor Lahren, she repeated to Berylip. And that tunnel, I think, would suit well your matron as her private quarters.
Yes, matron mother.
Consecrate this ground with the blood of slaves, Gwenthel instructed. Feed the primordial beast with the flesh of our enemies.
Yes, matron mother,
Berylip eagerly replied. So eagerly, matron mother Gwenthel thought. On impulse, Gwenthel lifted her arms out wide, tilted her head back, and closed her eyes.
Lift your scourge, she told Berylip.
Matron mother?
The priestess replied with a clear tremor in her voice.
It is fitting that my blood is first to seal the chapel.
Lift your scourge.
With trembling hands, Berylip complied. She didn't snap her snake-headed whip at the matron mother, but she didn't have to, for it was an instrument of Lady Lolth's wrath, and the snakes understood their purpose here. They lashed and tore at Quenthel's skin, and she reveled in the glory of Lolth as her blood dripped to the stones. She began to twirl and to dance, and Berylip kept pace, her four serpents biting again and again. After many steps and much blood it ended, and the matron mother cast a spell of healing to close her wounds, regain her strength, and neutralize the poison of Berylip's vipers. Then she took her own five-headed instrument from her belt. Now it was Berylip's turn to dance for the Spider Queen. Some time later, Gwenthel, Gromph, and Methil left Berylip lying on the floor of the primordial chamber in a pool of her own blood. Dazed and disoriented, the priestess would surely die if she could not find the clarity to collect her thoughts and her powers enough to heal herself from the venom of Quenthel's vicious serpents. In that tragic event, the matron mother figured, it would be the will of Lolth, and Matron Xerath would have no one to blame but herself for raising such impotent daughters. Chapter 12 Nets and Webs. Artemis and Treri twisted and turned, trying to upright himself before his descent. He had no idea what had hit him and everyone around him, but only that they were all flying now, bounced a dozen feet into the air by the rolling ground. He came around and saw his opponent similarly reacting. He glanced at the globe of darkness behind him and to the side, and noted Brother Afafrenfir bouncing down, then lying still along the ground, beside the darkness globe now, and twisted around, having landed awkwardly. This fight was over. He had no chance. He might defeat this noble drow of House Bayenry, but to what end? So he half-turned in his descent and landed with his legs already moving, sprinting back for the building down into the right of the burning stonecutter's solace. He waved his heavy cloak out behind him as a shield against the hand crossbow bolts. He heard Tiago Bayenry's protest. "Coward!" the drow cried. And Treri ignored him and sprinted around the edge of the building, sheathing his weapons as he went. He leaped and caught a handhold, and with exceptional strength and agility, spun himself up and over, throwing his legs above him and onto the low roof. He rolled over and came up in a crouch, and saw again Tiago Bayenry floating in the air just beyond the roof's edge. With an evil grin, the drow banged his sword against that translucent shield and stepped onto the roof. He lifted his blade in salute, bidding Entreri to come on. The assassin glanced around, seeking an escape route. He could run, perhaps, moving to the lower sections of the city. Surely the pursuit would become distracted by the many other targets. Entreri shook the thoughts from his mind and focused instead on this one drow stalking him. With a shrug, he drew his weapons and charged. They came together in a blur of movement, turning and leaping out to either side, diving back in. Sword and shield met sword and dagger, blades ever turning and re-angling, particularly from Entreri, who took great care not to let either of his weapons become entangled again in the web-like properties of that strange shield. The combatants turned and rolled as readily as their weapons, each seeking an advantageous angle, for they were surely well matched here. Other dark elves rose up as spectators, levitating around the roof line. Somehow that spurred Entreri on, and he began to drop his trailing foot back just a bit more with each riposte and each turn. He wanted to win now, even at the cost of his own life. So be it, he thought, as long as he could bring this one, this Bayenry, down before him. But he was running out of time as Tiago's allies positioned around them, and as this young drow warrior, superbly skilled and trained, matched his every move. Entreri dropped his foot back just a bit more as he spun out to the left, coming around with a backhand that Tiago ably ducked. And in came Tiago, clearly understanding Entreri's desire to flee.